MacDarnon is the author of 6 novels, including the best-selling The Ex-Boyfriend's Handbook, which was shortlisted for both the Romantic Novel of the Year Award and the Melissa Nathan Award for Comedy Romance. He's also written about life, love, and relationships for various publications, including The Times, Guardian, Cosmopolitan, Company, Glamour, Elle, and The Sun. Matt was born in Margate but escaped to Spain to write his first novel, in between working as a newspaper columnist and playing a lot of tennis. Previously, he's been a professional lifeguard, fitness equipment salesman, and an IT headhunter, but he prefers writing for a living. Matt, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Your writing, it seems to me, from a relatively unusual perspective, in that you're a man writing romantic novels. Is that how you define your book? Do you define yourself as a romantic novelist?
It's, you know, I don't know. It's how I seem to have been defined and genreized, if that's a word. You know, I just wanted to write, you know, stories that I wanted to tell and the kind of things that I wanted to read. And, you know, whether that makes me a romantic, I don't know. But, you know, I'm fascinated by relationships. I'm fascinated by, you know, how men and women get on and don't get on and, you know, stories that arise from those. So I guess if that puts me in a genre as a romantic novel. And I guess if you define a romantic novel as boy meets girl, boy and girl spend the whole novel not being together, and then they get together at the end, then, you know, that's what I do. So yeah, I certainly am not displeased when people define me as that, because I think it's a you know, long-standing, very popular genre, and to be included in that is great as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. But does it mean that you get more female readers for your work, and if so, is that because of how the books are marketed, do you think, or am I wrong in that perception?
My publishers told me that I get a lot more female readers than male readers. That, you know, generally generally women, you know, read a lot more than men anyway, and buy more books than men anyway. So, you know, how much that's skewed, I don't know. Certainly, my publishers market me more to the female end of the side of the market, given the way they package and where they advertise and the cover designs and that kind of thing. But I also know that, you know, I have quite a high proportion of men who read it from the emails that I get on a regular basis from them. You know, my USP, if I have one, I guess, is to kind of be giving the male point of view on things like life, love, and relationships, which, you know, in the genre, I think it's kind of me and Mike Gale are almost the only people that do that in this sort of way. So I can understand the publisher doing that. But at the same time, it's very interesting how, with the advent of e-books and the fact that book covers aren't such an issue, I seem to be having more people, you know, happy, mainly me, saying they're happy to read my books on the train now on their Kindle or on their phones, and they're less put off, you know, they don't have to hide a copy of it inside What Car magazine or something like that to be reading in public. So, long answer to a short question, but yes, I think I have more females than males read the books, but I know that the men read them and enjoy them too, which is great.
I think that's a really interesting point, though, actually. That obviously publishers will package things in a certain way in order to sell them, but actually the fact that you're writing from a male perspective about things which men are equally interested in but might not want to be read, exactly as you say, reading books with covers that are more marketed towards women, I really like that idea that that e-publishing is actually having a real impact on your readership. Also, of course, your books have a strong comic element as well, and I wonder whether that came naturally to you. In your first book, did the comedy just come out, or do you have to work at the comedy?
It's hard to say. I've always known that I wanted to be a comedy writer. My introduction to writing, the seed was sown, if you like, when I was 14 and I was at school, and one of the regular things we had to do was to write a piece about the previous day's sports match that we played in and read it out at assembly. And when I did my first one, I got a few laughs, and at that point I thought, this is great. This is what I want to do for a living, you know, make people laugh with my writing. And it took about another 30 years before I actually sat down and, you know, wrote the first word of the novel. But it's the kind of thing I like to read, and, you know, I like to think I can tell a joke or spin out a situation to make people laugh, and it's, you know, I get a lot of pleasure from doing that, and I love when people appreciate that in my work. So does it take work? Yes, I think it's, you know, it's hard to write a comedy, but it's hard to write a thriller, it's hard to write a a western. I'm sure it's if you feel more affinity with the genre, maybe it's easy, but, you know, to come up with different jokes over the course of 600,000-700,000 words is I guess a little bit tricky, but I guess I hope I'd have a flair for it, so I certainly don't find it a chore.
And you know, you talk about that sort of early writing, the fact that, you know, that was the kind of genre that you felt drawn to, and that, you know, obviously at some point you did sit down and start to write your
yeah.
first novel. What was the kind of journey in between? Were you thinking about writing a novel for a long time?
I'd always wanted to write something, but I think it's that classic case of if you don't know that anything out there exists in the space, you feel you have an idea you want to write in, it's a lot harder to get started and do it. And then I was on a skiing holiday one year, and a friend of mine passed me a copy of High Fidelity and said, you must read this wonderful book. And it was a revelation reading this, and it was kind of, finally I thought, great, you know, this is the kind of thing I want to write. This guy is amazing, it's funny, it's heartfelt, it deals with men's emotions and relationships and things, and that was fantastic. So, you know, every time since then I've sat down and tried to write High Fidelity, you know, six books down the line, I'm still trying. But it was once I'd read that book and I suddenly realized that, yes, you know, this has been a success, people will buy this kind of thing, and therefore, you know, maybe I have a chance of getting something like this published. Because before then I had no idea how the industry worked, I had no idea what you did, and I guess, you know, the first story I wanted to tell was in my first book, Best Man, was kind of a semi-autobiographical you know, story of a friend of mine who'd got married, and we all thought he wasn't doing the right thing, and you know, I thought that would make a good story. And I had, by that time, I had, you know, 20 odd years of relationship issues and problems and things to draw on, you know, both for myself and my friends, and I guess it just flowed from there, really.
So I'm just sort of thinking about that sort of whole thing about from that moment of starting to write the novel to publication. You know, obviously we hear so much about how difficult it is to get published.
Yeah.
Was it an easy journey for you?
No. It was for me, it was probably the same as most writers out there. I wrote, you know, what I thought I could do my best. I packaged up three chapters. I sent them off to lots of agents. I got lots of rejections. And you know, the encouraging thing from my point of view was, I had the silliest thing, but before I really started writing the novel, there was a competition in the Daily Telegraph to write a story in 50 words.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, I'll have a go at that. That sounds like quite fun. And they had something like 25,000 entries, and they published a book of the first of the top 100. And I was highly commended, which meant, you know, I was in the top 25, and it was fantastic. You know, I was published in a proper book, and I'd written a story that had, you know, done quite well in a big competition. And I thought, okay, well, you know, a novel is just, you know, X times 50 words. So if I can do it in 50, I can string it out a bit. And as I said, I wrote my three chapters, sent it off, got all the rejections coming back in, you know, as you do. But for every fourth or fifth rejection I had, one of them would give me a little bit of advice and say, yeah, I like what you did here, but what you need to do is, you know, think about making this, you know, writing it in this way, or think about, you know, doing this to your characterization, or whatever. So I'd do that. I'd then submit it to some more. I got rejected and rejected and rejected again. And then one would come back and say, you know, you need to do that. And then eventually I got about my 30th rejection. My 31st letter back was saying, yes, I like the three chapters, send me the rest of it. And I hadn't written the rest of it. So I then had to sit down for the next 4 or 5 months and frantically write out the rest of it, which I sent off, and of course I duly got that rejected. But then I had something else to send to other people, and I kept sending it to various writers and publishers at this stage. And at one point somebody came back to me and said, and I think it was the best piece of advice that I was ever given, they told me to read the bestsellers in my genre and see how they achieve that page-turning quality. And I remember that piece of advice word for word, and so I did it. And you know, I'd always kind of read them, but with an enjoyment factor in mind, as opposed to analysing them.
Yeah.
So I read the Nick Hornbys, I read Tony Parsons, I read John O'Farrell, who, you know, The Best Man Can Get was one of the, you know, funniest books I've ever written.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm, you know, maybe through osmosis or something, I learned a little bit more. And reworked and re-edited my manuscript, and eventually an agent liked it and took me on. And you know, it was a hard slog. It must have taken 3 years. It took endless rewrites. But, you know, that unless you're very lucky or extremely talented, I think that's kind of what you have to do.
But I just think that's one of the best stories I've ever heard, actually, about that process, to be honest, because I think what really comes to me from that was the fact that you went in with the spirit of a desire to learn, B, kind of acceptance. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that the rejections weren't hard along the way, but you kept using them to move forward. I think it's so much harder for new writers to sort of hear stories of rejection when, you know, stories of authors who kind of flip through quite easily. But I think that kind of tenacity that you showed is amazing. And did you get downhearted in that process? Of course you do.
Every single thunk that you hear when your manuscript is returned to you through the letterbox, and every single email that says thanks, you know, but no thanks, is a massive slap in the face. But I think at the same time, I'd also read something like, you know, John Grisham had had 61 rejections. And I also read a great story about an American writer who'd been submitting his novel to all the American publishing houses for about 2 or 3 years, and every single one had rejected him.
Mm.
And then a friend had said to him, look, you know, publishing houses actually have quite a high turnover of staff. Mm. So if you start submitting it again, chances are there'll be somebody in you. And about the third one he submitted it to took him on and he got published. And, you know, there are enough stories like that, I think, to give you hope. If in the meantime you are trying to learn from the feedback that you get, I think, and trying to apply that to your manuscript, because, you know, I wasn't a published writer. The only thing I'd written was a 50-word, you know, story. So I just kept reading, I kept tweaking, I kept editing, and, you know, it was perseverance. And do you know what? It's very interesting. I know an awful lot of authors nowadays, and some, you know, most of them are hugely more successful than I am, and they all have stories, similar stories. Several of them wrote 3 or 4 complete novels that were all rejected before they actually had their 4th or 5th one published. And, you know, I'm not sure whether I'd have had the perseverance to do that, but, you know, I take my hat off to those that did, that had such a desire to be a writer and to be published that they would do that. But, you know, I know that perseverance, listening to criticism, you know, taking it on board and editing are the key to making this happen. And I think the other thing, sorry to go on about this, but I think the other thing that was interesting for me was that I'd read an awful lot in the genre at that time, and, you know, I'd read some like Fidelity and like The Best Man I Can Get, but I thought there's nowhere I can write anything as good as this. But I'd also read some, and I won't name any names, where I thought, you know, I think I can write a bit better than this, and they got published, or I think my story is a bit better, or I think I can be a bit funnier. And so I knew that whilst I wasn't one of the best, I could probably write at least as well as some of the worst. And that was motivating too from my point of view.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And one of the things that actually comes up for me listening to that as well is I'm thinking about the whole thing about e-publishing and how quite a lot of authors now, when they're getting a few rejections, are immediately going to e-publishing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm just sort of raising that. It's an interesting thing, actually, as to whether people... I suppose, what's your view about new authors who choose to e-publish at a relatively early stage? Do you think it's a positive thing, or do you think actually they should be holding back?
I think it's a completely individual thing. I know how cutthroat publishing is, and it's got worse recently because of obviously, you know, advances have been squeezed, and you know, people are trying to go in for more and more sure bets. So I think it's a lot harder for debut authors now than it was in my day. I think in my day it was a lot harder for, you know, it was perhaps in the early days of the chick lit boom. So I can fully understand people that want to do that. I think that they are probably missing out on a few rounds of editing, feedback, advice, if that's the case. And I think their books might be better if they do go through that scenario. But, you know, I think one of the great things about digital publishing is that it opens up a world that's been a very, very closed world, you know, to an awful lot of people. It makes it more accessible, and I think it's a wonderful thing. And I think if your desire is to produce a body of work that you want to see published, then it's a fantastic way of doing it.
Thank you. That's very useful. I'm thinking also now just about your subject matter and how you write. You know, I know it's a sort of age-old question that writers are kind of continually fascinated by individual processes.
Yeah.
You know, it's that sort of, do you start with your concept? You know, that do you plan your entire novel? I know we've heard this question a lot of times.
Yeah. I'm the worst person to ask this question because I have planned novels, I have not planned novels. I have written novels based on a sentence. I have written novels based on a title. I have not been able to start novels until I've got a title. I have started novels in the middle. I have started them without knowing where they're going. And I couldn't tell you which one works better for me or not. So, you know, my most successful book by far, The Ex-Boyfriend's Handbook, was a result of getting the publishing deal for Best Man. And my agent saying to me, you know, when they speak to you, they're going to want you to, it's going to be a 2-book deal, so you need to come up with an idea for a second book. book. And so over the course of half an hour, I sat down and came up with that one. And it proved to be the easiest one to write and by far the most successful. So I'd love to give you my formula for successful writing of a novel, but it's worked differently for me in so many different ways. I just, you know, the fundamental thing is I think if I have a gem of an idea and a few characters clear in my mind, then as long as I can write 1,000 words a day about them, I know that within, you know, 4 or 5 months, I'll have a decent first draft that I can then work, rework, change the emphasis of, you know, make into something novel-shaped. And again, I think for me, I actually probably prefer writing it organically without a major plan because, you know, sometimes the characters surprise me and they want to go off in one direction or do something else or something else happens. And I think if I plan from start to finish, it might not have that spontaneity. And I think if the characters surprise me, then hopefully they'll, you know, they'll surprise the reader.
I think what's interesting about what you say, though, actually, is that in a way it's not about method. It's actually about productivity and focus on doing the work.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I mean, I've just, a good friend of mine, Chrissy Manby, who's written, you know, 100 books, has just published on the back of her latest novel a how to write a romance book. And, you know, she uses this wonderful approach that she's devised from screenwriting techniques and this, that, and the other. And I read it and thought, wow, this is fantastic. This is a really good format to try, and I might try it with my next one. But, you know, I just realized that these things work for different people. And, you know, for me, it can be as simple as I have an idea for a funny scenario or a number of funny scenes that I can string together and they will form this story. And, yeah, while I have an idea of overall direction, I like sitting down at my desk and thinking, right, what's going to happen today? As opposed to, right, today I have to get the characters from A to B and, okay, how do I do that? So, no, I enjoy the spontaneity of it.
Do you get stuck ever or do you find...
Oh, yeah. I think every writer does. I don't think I've ever had anything as serious as writer's block. I think if I get stuck on a certain bit, I'll just go and write or edit or polish another piece of the book. So, yeah, you know, there are times where I think, right, I've written myself into a corner now and I don't know where these characters are going to go. And you know, the subconscious is a wonderful thing. You can go away and work on something else or go and have a game of tennis or a cup of coffee or do anything. And then you come back to your desk and, oh, miraculously, you've worked out a way around it. Or, you know, even if that way around it is deleting what you've written to lead up to that scene. I think it's, you know, blocks are part of it. It's like if you go for a drive somewhere, you're going to get stuck behind some traffic occasionally or stuck at the lights. But, you know, eventually you can either take a slightly different direction or the block will go.
And you mentioned to me earlier, before the interview, in fact, that you were at the moment working on two books at the same time. Is that how it's
that's
working?
Right. That's right. That's right. That's interesting. I mean, you know, I've written 6 comedy romance novels, and you know, I've when I first started out, I wanted to write one book and get it published, and I'm really and I've done that, you know, plus 5, which I'm really, really pleased about. But I kind of sat down and thought, right, I want to write about the male point of view on friendship, relationships, getting married, having kids, getting dumped, getting divorced, whatever the 6th one is, I can't remember now. but I've kind of done that. And so my point of view is, okay, well, I'll take a bit of time off writing the comedy romance now and do something a bit more serious and return to this at a later stage. And so I've spent probably the last 2.5-3 years writing my big, serious magnum opus. And then for a little light relief again, about a year ago, I started again on book number 7, which is another comedy romance. And, I like it. I find the books are significantly different, but I can switch between the two. And, you know, even in some cases, you know, spend the morning working on one and spend the afternoon working on the other. But, it's an interesting, you know, it's like, I suppose it's like going out for a run in the morning and going for a bike ride in the afternoon. It's, you know, they're both exercise, but they're a slightly different form of it.
But you still managed to fit in the tennis, I hope.
I do. it would be very dull to work as a novelist and not enjoy the daytime games and tennis that schedule allows you. You know, it doesn't mean that I'm not sometimes at my desk at, you know, 1 in the morning puzzling every blank piece of paper. But, I try and fit it all in, put it that way.
And which of the novels do you foresee finishing first? Do you have a deadline for one of them in particular?
The problem is, Jackie, I'm a big believer in that phrase, and I don't know who coined it, that you never actually finish a novel, you just decide to stop working on it. And that's very much the case for me. I've written 96,000 words of the serious one, still not sure whether it works particularly, so that, you know, that's needs constant going back and tweaking and editing. The the easier process is to write the next, is to finish the funnier one. Mm-hmm. But as to when I start submitting either of them to for agent's approval or whatever, I'll see. But I want to get them both right. And as to which one comes first, I'll come back to me on that one, please.
That's as organic as the rest of it.
Exactly.
Which is
exactly,
as it should be, I think, exactly like you say. It's that you want to get the most important thing is getting the book right.
Sure.
I think, why don't we, it's been really interesting to hear about your processes and sort of how you've reached this point. We've got a few writers on the line, so I just wonder if anybody, we've got Denise, Rowena and Louise on the line. I wonder if you wanted to come in with any questions for Matt at all.
Yes, it's Denise. Hello, Matt.
Hi,
really enjoyed listening to you and feel all revved up and ready to go again. But I wanted to know if you've ever written any screenplays or been drawn to that, because the romantic comedies, there are many films of romantic comedies, and does that interest you in any way?
I would love to write the screenplay. I have kicked around a few ideas. I've even signed myself up for a screenplay course at one point, but it's a very different, or my understanding of it is that it's a very different process to the novel writing. And as Jackie mentioned, I'm quite a tennis fan, and to fit in writing two novels and a screenplay and play sufficient tennis is a little bit tricky in my schedule. Short answer is I'd love to do it. I can see myself doing it in the future. I'd also like to write for the stage as well, because going to see a good play is a fantastic thing.
Yeah,
but,
I agree.
A couple of my novels have been optioned. CBS in the US have just optioned The Ex-Boyfriend's Handbook with potential development for a sitcom, which is very, very exciting. And I would love to beg, borrow and steal a seat in the writer's room on that, or at least a view of the writing process to learn it. But it's certainly something that, I love watching romantic comedies, and it's certainly something that I'd love to do in the future.
Yeah, they say that TV is the new film. I mean, it's a sector of films now or something, because films have got a bit stuck in their genre, and TV is breaking out, in America particularly, breaking out quite a bit more.
Oh, no, and I think from my point of view, I love the comedy. I love, working on a sentence or working on a joke until it really sort of zings. And, you watch some of the best American sitcoms, and my word, do they do that. Absolutely, it's something I'd love to go into. I think it would be good for my writing, in general terms. So if anybody else is on the line who actually works for any big film company or American TV show, please get in touch after the call.
Okay. Just a quickie, I've just come back from Malaga. Are you actually in the town of Malaga or further along the coast?
No, I used to live just in the town of Malaga, behind the back of it, just behind the square where Picasso was born, if you went to that place. But, lovely part of Spain, fantastic place, Malaga. And, the whole country is fantastic, so good. Very nice.
Mm. Great.
Okay, thanks for the question.
Louise or Rowena, did you have any burning questions for Matt at all?
Yeah, this is Rowena. I was interested, Matt, that you were saying you're working now on a sort of, in inverted commas, more serious novel compared to the lighter comedies that you'd written. Is that, do you anticipate that your agent or your publisher are gonna say to you, oh, I thought you were, we're not so sure about the serious voice, so when are you going to write another comedy?
Yes, is the short answer. But it's something I kind of felt that I needed to do. Having written six books in the same genre over the last, 6 or 7 years, I'm worried I'm getting a bit stale about that. And every single book that I've written has been first person, present tense, told from the male point of view. So the serious book, not only is it a slight departure from subject matter and content, it's also told in the third person past tense from the male and female point of view. So it's been very good for me to flex my writing muscles, if you like, and try something a bit different. And I may not be able to do it. It might be that my only forte, if you like, is writing in the genre that I've had the books published in. So we shall see. But it's something I wanted to do. I had the idea for the story, and I thought it would work well, in this kind of style, and it wasn't a story that lent itself to too many jokes. So, Yeah, so I'm you know, I'm a realist enough about the industry to understand that not everything gets published, you know, even from people that have a publication track record. So if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And maybe, you know, to get back to the earlier question, maybe it's then something I could adapt into a screenplay or something like that. But it's been a very interesting process. I can recommend writing different things from time to time, which is, again, why I, you know, I quite like doing the pieces for Cosmo or the pieces for the papers every now and again, because it's, you know, as a writer, I think it helps you to, as I say, to just, you know, get a slightly different viewpoint, and it refreshes you a little bit to do different things. But, you know, I certainly know that, and I know from my friends that there is, the industry is competitive. It's wonderful when you're in it, but there's, you know, you need to produce something that a publisher thinks they can sell in order for you to get it published in the first place. And again, going back to one of Jackie's earlier questions, and, you know, if nobody wants it, I'll probably get it as good as I can, and I'll probably try and publish it myself as an ebook. So, you know, I think that's, I think, again, that's why that's been a very interesting opening up of the market, and that it gives people the chance to do that if they want to. So, it certainly won't have been a labour wasted, but I'm fully prepared that it maybe not, maybe won't hit the shelves in a couple of years' time. We shall see. Fingers crossed, please.
I'm sort of interested, just nosily more than anything else, in how that relationship works with your, say, your agents. That, you know, they know that, I presume you have a you know, an ongoing relationship, and then you tell them, I'm going to try something different.
Yeah.
They try and dissuade you.
I think the agent's role in the industry is to be quite supportive in terms of what the author wants to do, and it's not as if, you know, I don't sell that many books that if I, you know, don't do something very well, my agent can't afford the payments on his yacht. You know, he's not kind of that, he's not that reliant on me. So, you know, I think they want you to keep on writing, and I've never said this was going to be a complete departure for me. You know, it may again be that I decide to go and approach, you know, publishers or another agent under a different name with this book. It depends, you know, because if you are known as being, for example, a romantic comedy writer, it may well be that nobody's interested in publishing you in a different slot. So, you know, again, we'll see. I'll cross that bridge when I come to it, but it'll be interesting to see. As I said earlier, the industry is in quite an interesting stage of flux at the moment, given the uncertainty that ebooks and the financial crisis have squeezed upon it. So we'll see. I'm positive. I write every day on it, so I'm positive, but we'll see.
I think what I was going to say, Matt, thank you for that. Thanks for the question, Marina, as well. It's just that actually, you know, my feeling is that it could actually be, I'm sure it's yours potentially as well, it could be a book that actually takes your writing to a sort of massive, it could be the book that is your massive book as well. I mean, usually, you know, that's a kind of important part of it as well. You know, we don't know what these changes are going to do, but there is a big market for the kind of book that you're talking about at the end of the day.
Exactly, and, you know, I wasn't being cynical in writing it for the bigger market, but, you know, it's kind of a story I wanted to tell. And I think, you know, most sort of mid-list authors like me would hope that their next big book is going to be the massive one. I mean, a very good friend of mine, Jojo Moyes, has just had her ninth novel, you know, which has been the one that's gone stellar for you. It's a book called Me Before You, which is a wonderful book. And, you know, she's done very well up until now, but this one has gone absolutely stratospheric for her. And, you know, it's number nine, so you never know. Mm. You never know what's going to, you know, what's going to make a difference and what's going to take you to the next level. So thanks for your confidence, Jackie. Fingers crossed from my point of view. But, you know, we'll see. It may also be the book that killed my career, and I might be putting it away in a shoebox and hiding it under my bed. So we'll see. But, we'll see what happens.
Louise, do you have any questions you wanted to ask?
Yeah, I was just thinking, do you also write short stories, Matt, given that you write for company and people like that?
I've written a few short stories, and I've had them published in the likes of You magazine and Sunday Express magazine and some of those things. I find short stories incredibly, incredibly difficult to write. It's easy to write a 90,000 word novel and say what you want to say, but to make it happen over 1,000 words or 1,500 words, I find very tough. And there's a famous quote, and again, I can't remember the writer. I shouldn't do this, but somebody had written a letter to somebody else, and the other person said, "That was a great letter. I really liked the letter that you wrote me." And the writer said, "Yes, and if I'd had more time, I'd have made it shorter." And for me, that sums up the short story writing experience. It's something that I don't mind having a go at every now and again, but it's not my expertise, put it that way. I think it's a skill that people have or they don't. And I think if you're a novelist and you have the luxury of, as I said, using 90,000 words to describe your characters and tell the story, then to try and do it in 1/90th of that is very daunting. And I'm fairly sure that most of my novelist friends feel the same, actually.
Yeah. Oh, thanks very much, because I tend to find that myself.
Yes, there you go.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Shall I have one? I have one little question, actually, if I have a question for me. I wondered whether you felt more pressure from a publisher or agent to do more self-marketing these days than you used to. I suppose it probably happens more around publication time, but are they expecting you as published authors to do more in terms of your own marketing particularly? Is there that pressure to get the Twitter going, for example?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Twitter and Facebook, anything else they think you can do. Fortunately, I love Twitter. I think it's a great medium. It's the biggest distraction I have to my writing day, to be honest. But yeah, every author nowadays is encouraged, in inverted commas, to be on social media, is encouraged to do all these promotional pieces around, the time the book comes out. I mean, occasionally I write the sort of thing for Cosmo that I maybe wouldn't choose to keep in my literary canon, if you like. I think my highlight piece was 5 Male in the Sack Myths Busted that I wrote for them a couple of years ago, because it came out at the same time as one of the books, and obviously you get promotion on the back of that. But again, publishers, they're kind of embracing this social media phenomenon without necessarily understanding how effective it is. And there are so many blogs nowadays where they review books, and all the book review sites and so on and so forth. So again, it's a wonderful thing, because I think that most people now are turning to the internet to do or review or to choose or to, check ratings on everything they do, from restaurants to holidays to films to books. So, I think publishers are pushing us writers to do that, and rightly so, because if not, then you're missing out on a valuable chance of connecting with people. Mm. And, it makes a writer's day when, in the early days I used to get the odd letter from people, but now, to receive emails via the website or contact via Facebook or a tweet saying, yes, I enjoyed the latest book, or that made me laugh, or whatever, it's fantastic. Because again, for writers, we spend most of our week sitting in a darkened room with just our laptop and our imagination for company. Mm-hmm. So to actually interact with people and to meet, in inverted commas, people who read and appreciate the books is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it makes our day, if not our week, because again, to actually meet people at festivals and things is few and far between. So I love it, and I will continue to do it, as much as I can.
Mm. And do you have a Twitter strategy in terms of sort of who you follow back, for example, and how you decide whether you follow back when people follow you? And is it just a hunch, or do you try and keep
I think I've got about 700 followers on Twitter, so I can't possibly follow them all back, because I'd never get any work done whatsoever. I tend to, if it's somebody I know, or if it's somebody I think might be interesting or amusing, then that's great for me. But I'm conscious that I don't want to get distracted, and the internet is a wonder. I'm currently reading 4 times the newspapers I used to read, because they're now online, and checking out other bits and pieces. And I finally, after 6 years, stopped looking at Amazon every 5 minutes to check my sales ranking, which has sent my productivity way up again, which is good. But now it's just, for me, Twitter is it's a fun diversion. It's I like seeing the odd things come in. I like to try and make the odd comment going out, and as I say, I try not to let it distract me too much, but I fear that I probably fail in that endeavour on a regular basis.
But you've been very productive over the years, so I hope so. Not too much, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, Twitter and Facebook are fairly new, remember? I think technology is a wonderful thing, as I say, from interacting with people to the social media to to the e-books to I'm now reading books on my phone when I'm sitting on the tube, which is I never thought something I'd do. I love the Kindle, and I think these are good things, because they have brought reading and connection with reading and writing to a much greater number of people through a much greater number of media as well. So long may it continue, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Matt. That's been, you know, a really fascinating opportunity to talk to you. And I know it's inspired me to go back to my writing desk, so I'm sure it's inspired everybody else on the line and those who'll hear this in future.
Thanks very much for asking me on, and thanks everybody for turning up this morning and listening to me waffle on, basically.
Lovely.
Thank you, Matt. Let us know when the next one's out there. But in the meantime, I think we'll all be buying your current ones and downloading them to our Kindles. So.
That's very funny. And you can find me on Twitter at ThatDoneWrite, and that's where I tend to make most of my inane pronouncements and book news and this kind of stuff. So I look forward to seeing you on there.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Lovely.
Okay, thanks, everybody. Nice talking to you all.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.